Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owlpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always and every single week, the one and only, is that a freshly haircutted Drea Kaufman?
Every time you say freshly, it makes me want freshly baked bread. I blame you for my carb addiction.
Okay, so this has nothing to do with this show, but I saw somebody and they had like a gif of a Krispy Kreme donut that was like dripping icing, and I was like,
that sounds good. Now you're making me hungry, man.
I know, seriously.
You're killing me.
it was painful because then I wanted a donut all day and I still haven't had a donut, and that was like 3 days ago.
I was talking to somebody, I made an analogy to cake, and I have wanted cake ever since that, and that was like 3 days ago, and I haven't had cake. Man, I mean, all of our episodes either start with us talking about food or the weather. So I hope everyone enjoys those two topics.
Oh, well, you're welcome. And thank you so much.
Because this is the Food and Weather podcast.
Yes. Welcome to Food and Weather with Matt and Drea. But it was also really exciting, besides the food and the weather, which is we got a brand new review there on Apple Podcasts. And want to say thank you to Aaron Tranmill for their review. They gave us 5 stars and they said, magical. I just came across this fantastic podcast today and I am hooked. Thanks for being a bright spot in this crazy world right now. Carry on, my fellow Ravenclaws.
Woo!
Yay,
Ravenclaw Pride!
It's so great. We really appreciate that. It does mean a lot. And honestly, we've had a lot of people, I think, find the show during this time frame. And I got a message from somebody on the old Instagram, which I really appreciate. And they said that they had just found Owlpost as well, and they were really enjoying the episodes. And so wanted to say thank you to Seth for reaching out as well. It was really cool. We do this because we love it, but we also do it for you guys. So thanks for letting us know that you like us.
I was going to say it's always great to hear. And even if it takes us a little while to get back to you guys, like, it's always a nice little pick me up to hear that you liked the episode or you want to talk about the episode or the books or the podcast or anything. So keep it coming. It makes our days while we're stuck at home and inside or meandering around close by like lost little lambs in the world. So yes, please keep it coming.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. So make sure you're subscribed so you get the episodes as soon as they drop. Of course, if you're on Apple Podcasts, do hit us up with a star rating review. You can find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We're on Instagram at TheNerdParty. And you can also find us online at TheNerdParty.com. And we've got the contact section over there. And you can send Drea and I an email if you would like through that. So many different ways to contact us. But we are at Chapter 4, The Seven Potters. And I thought it was really nice, Drea, that this beginning here really kind of continues some of the work that she was doing in the last chapter, where we are basically reminiscing and we are finally, this is the last chapter where we are going to close out this whole part of Harry's life with the Dursleys and living there in Privet Drive. And I really appreciated the way that we spend this little bit of time before everybody gets there of Harry just kind of wandering around the house. And, you know, he doesn't just have bad memories, right? There are some good memories here. And it's mixed, of course, with the bad. And I kind of like Harry being thoughtful and just kind of a slightly whimsical and even poking fun at the fact that he doesn't have a ton of good memories here, but there's just something really, I don't know. I do kind of want to say it's a little bit magical just to watch Harry to have a moment for himself in this house and to put it to bed.
Yeah, he's got like a homecoming or graduation goggles on where like he's looking mm-hmm. back and everything seems very rosy and he's reminiscing. And I think even though it sometimes skews a little bit of how we feel about something, right? Sometimes you start thinking like, am I doing the right thing? Does he really want to leave? Was it really as bad as he thought it was? It's still, it's relatable, right? Like we've all done that in some fashion. You've looked back on school or a relationship or a job or something and been, do I now have a new perspective on it now that it's done, over, gone, whatever? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of those moments where she really does a good job of weaving humanity and things that are very relatable into a very unrelatable situation. Like not many of us can relate to being a fugitive wizard on the run from a super super evil guy who just cast his whole abusive family away, right? Like that's not a super relatable situation, but she's
that
able
hasn't
to
happened
take
to
it.
You
No, that's not something I can personally relate to. Not me. But I can relate to the nostalgia and the looking back and thinking about the good times and things like that. And so it gives us a moment that's very real for Harry and very real for us. So it is nice. And I do appreciate the opportunity to take a moment and appreciate the good things around us, even in a really shitty situation. In the situation Harry found himself in, which wasn't great, right? He had a really terrible situation and he takes a step back to look at those positive things. And I think that's something everyone can do a little bit more of. So it's kind of a blend of those things. But yeah, I definitely had this high school graduation goggle moment with the house where he's wandering and that terrible song is playing through his head and
the whole thing. You all know what I'm talking about.
Who's graduated from high school and heard that song. You know what I'm talking about.
You know, I liked what you said there because, and I think this is one of the things that I so appreciate about Harry as a character in the way that we have him written is that he is able to, like, again, we were kind of talking about last week how there's this change happening in Harry where he's starting to see things from a different perspective. You know, he's seeing people from a different perspective, but he's even seeing this place as a different perspective. And I think, you know, all of this talk about in this chapter we're going to get, and we had kind of implied in the last chapter, but, you know, Harry has been able to live here safely away from the fear of being captured by Voldemort because of the power of the spell that Dumbledore used and the blood of his family. And regardless of whether or not he was treated well, which he was not, and it was pretty horrible, they still kept him safe. And I think that there's a part of Harry that is thinking about that. And again, not automatically just discounting just because something was not great, that there wasn't something good that came from it. And so being able to see both sides is so important. And I mean, we personally, I think we just kind of live in this binary world where it's either the worst or it's the best. And a lot of times, most of life is just right in the middle. You know, and I think that this chapter here at the beginning, I didn't mean to get all philosophical right here at the beginning, but like it really does. I think it helps us to remember that life is more in the middle and we need to find a way to kind of come back from the extremes that we're at and come back to the middle, just as Harry is able to do here in this beginning where he remembers, oh man, that's the doormat. Remember when Dudley threw up because of the Dementor attack there and that, you know, Dumbledore walked through that door last year, you know, like he's remembering these things that did happen that were good there. And then even remembering back to the fact of when he used to sleep under the cupboard and he used to have these confusing dreams that he couldn't explain, but there were flashes of green light and then there was a flying motorcycle and like, again, and then he found out he was a wizard and his whole life changed, you know? So it's just, I think it's a really nice reminder of that there's more to life than just the absolute worst or the absolute best. And, you know, finding our way through that middle is so important. And it was just kind of a nice little moment here. And it's interesting. It's really short, but it's very impactful.
Yeah. And so along those lines, when you're talking, I kind of had two thoughts. I think the first thing we want to do too is clarify that those feelings and those good times that happened in the house and those good opportunities, they don't discount the abuse that he went
exactly.
through. And they don't excuse
Absolutely.
The abuse,
nope,
right?
Not at all.
So to your point, yeah, it's not a way of justifying their actions, right? That's not how we're taking this. It's about him understanding that there's more than that abuse in his life, right? And appreciating more than the abuse he's in. And that he shouldn't be grateful for the abuse coming back to the house and being grateful for being treated that way. You know what I mean? Like, there's
yeah,
a lot
absolutely.
To that.
Yep.
The other thing is totally not philosophical at all or deep in any way, shape, or form. But when we talk about and are reminded of the fact that the protection granted to Harry actually comes from Dumbledore, I'm curious why it didn't die when Dumbledore died. Because everything else, generally speaking, magical things are tied to their caster. And if the caster dies, the spell also subsides. So I think that's an interesting thought. Either it's a kind of a different type of magic that, you know, or we just don't think that hard about it. But essentially, it could just be that it did. And nobody really thought that hard about it. Nobody really thought about it. And so it could be that technically the whole time Dumbledore's been dead, he hasn't actually been safe. At the Dursley's house, which is fine because as far as we know, there's not a huge gap between then and, you know, we're not talking a year or even that many months. I don't remember how many it's been. We can go back and look. I think it's at the beginning of the last chapter. But yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, too, because, you know, him being petrified against in the stairwell ended when Dumbledore died. So why wouldn't the magical protection he gave also die when Dumbledore dies?
Yeah. So. I didn't ever take it that way. I always felt like that, with being petrified, it wore off because the spell does, regardless of, you know, somebody's died, it doesn't last forever.
Except for in that chapter, it specifically calls out the fact that he's no longer petrified because Dumbledore's dead. Like, that's literally the step one, step
really?
Two.
I don't remember that at all. I'm going to have to go back and reread that then because I don't remember that being the case.
We can talk about it next week, too.
Yeah.
Not like this is the last time we're going to talk about things. But that was just a random thought I had when you were talking.
Yeah, no. but I mean, yeah, that's, I don't know. And I definitely
why
have never
don't
taken.
Know, Matthew, why don't you know? Why don't you know
well,
the answer
I mean,
to all
it's a
made-up
universe. I don't know all the rules.
Just like, why don't you know about accountants and filing wizarding taxes?
I'm sorry.
Anyway, it's okay. We can move on.
What I was going to say, though, is that I never had taken it in here. You know, like when you cast a spell, especially like the one that's protecting Harry, it's in. The spell itself is incumbent upon the stipulations that we know have been laid out, which is, you know, as long as Harry can call this home till he's an adult, which, you know, for them is 17, then he will be safe because of, you know, sharing the blood of his family. So
it could be. It could just be that this type of spell also isn't the same as the type. I mean, like, there's
absolutely.
A whole thing here, right? It's just random thought I had as you were talking. So,
but what's fascinating is when everybody gets here, and all of these people show up. I mean, it's like Ron and Hermione and Fred and George and Mad Eye
and Bill
Lupin
and
just pretty much everybody in his life shows up, and
everyone and the kitchen sink all
yeah,
show
pretty
up.
Much, pretty yeah. much. And I really love that Mad-Eye's like, you know, things have changed, and you know, he meets them outside and they're talking, and Kingsley Stackpole's even there, and he's like, wait, I thought you were guarding the Muggle Prime Minister. And he's like, well, you're more important. And then Tonks and Lupin have gotten married, and you know, she's showing off the ring, and Harry's like, oh, this is so exciting. And so everybody's starting to catch up, basically, because, you know, they haven't seen Harry in a couple months here. And Mad-Eye's like, we got to get down to business. And he explains that Pius Thickknees has gone over to the other side, and because he's the Minister for Magic now, that has created a problem, because in the name of protecting Harry Potter, he has basically made it impossible for them to use any other way for them to get away from Harry's house magically, other than things that can't be traced, which is you're left with brooms and thestrals and, of course, Hagrid's motorbike. And so that's how they plan to get Harry away. But not only that, we're going to use some decoys, and this does not make Harry very happy.
No, this goes against the very kind of core of what Harry believes, right? And that he doesn't believe he's anything special. He doesn't believe anybody should be sticking their neck out for him, even though he kind of knows differently now. And so the idea of them all putting targets on their back is like, no, he's like, no, I'm out. And even Madungus Fletcher is here to become a Harry, right? You talk about pairs. Basically, we're getting into a situation where there's going to be a Harry and a protector, right? So there's a pair of all of these, which is why we have so many different Harry Potters, because they're going to try to make you figure out which one's the right one. And I love when Mad-Eye says, it really stuck out to me, when Madungus is kind of freaking out, like, oh, I told you I'd rather protect than be Harry. Like, why would I want to paint that target on my back? And I think Mad-Eye points out something very important that even Harry kind of like takes a moment with. And it's like, Voldemort wants to kill Harry himself. The safest person you could be in this scenario is Harry, because no, everyone else is going to be trying to kill everyone protecting a Harry.
Yeah.
Trying to find the real Harry. So like, unless you tell them that you're not actually Harry Potter, you're not in a ton of danger unless you actually get all the way to Voldemort, which is going to be difficult, right? Like, you're safer in the situation being a Harry clone, if you will. So I think that was such an interesting way to think about it. And I think I almost get the impression that that's one of those few things that makes it a little bit okay in Harry's mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I also really appreciate that we get Mad-Eye telling him, look, everybody here who's making this decision is an adult. They have the right to choose what they want to do. And you need to respect their choice. And if their choice is to try and protect you, basically, as you've tried to do for all of us for so long, get over yourself, is basically what he's saying. And I kind of appreciate that, because sometimes, you know, we forget that it's okay to allow people to help us. And Harry has always been kind of somebody who has tried to take care of himself, and he has his two best friends. But even then, he still has this desire to not let anybody do anything for him. He has no problem doing things for others, but he really has a problem with allowing people to do things for him. And I think it's another great lesson here that it's okay to allow yourself to be taken care of by other people and to allow them to choose to help you, even if it's going to be dangerous for them. That's their choice. The same way you should be able to get to choose to do that for them.
Well, and it's their way of fighting in the fight in yep. some way. They can't actually be Harry, as much as we want to believe with Polyjuice Potion. They can't actually be Harry. They can't actually be this chosen one who can end all the suffering. But this is something that is within their control and they can do. And they're making an educated decision to do that. No, everyone fully knows what they're doing and are committed to this and know the stakes. And it's not about Harry anymore. It's about
right.
the bigger picture. And I think he's slowly starting to realize that. And honestly, the fixation on it being just him, one, he can't say anymore that he's not significant
right.
to this battle, right? Like, he knows for a fact that it has to be him and why. But it also is about more than him, and he needs to start thinking about that. And I think this is one of those turning moments where he kind of stops fighting it, because he knows it's not about him anymore. Not about him, right? It's about him. I wish everyone could see my weird arm gestures on this call. It's not about him. Yeah, all of that. So, I mean, in essence, he has to start thinking about the larger strategy mm-hmm. in play here, and that he plays a significant part, and that if he does get killed, that, you know, it's over. It's over. Everybody loses. And so some people putting themselves at risk to make sure that doesn't happen is got to be okay.
Yeah. Well, and it is, what's nice here is before we get super serious is there's this great moment as everybody's changing into Harry. And, you know, of course, the twins are making jokes about all sorts of things, which is funny. Fleur is really frustrated that she, that she looks hideous. You know, it would be kind of weird to see your wife change into a man. I mean, you know that, you know, it would still be weird.
It would be weird, but it's still your wife, you know.
Yeah, no. I really love Ron making the joke about how he knew Ginny was lying about that tattoo because there's not anything on Harry's chest.
I do love that. I forgot about that, but I do love that.
And then, of course, Hermione being the comment of like how bad his eyesight really is, you know, and her experiencing that for the first time, basically what it's like to have bad eyesight. So I just thought those things are cute.
Actually had that happen the first time my husband put my glasses on as a joke, and he's like, oh dear Lord, how terrible is your eyesight, because not great. But yeah, I mean, we've literally lived that moment, so yep. I really appreciated that moment, and it's very Hermione of her to have that as the takeaway, right? And I do love that they So we have these kind of funny moments, and everyone's wearing the same outfit, and it fits everyone the same because they're all Harry, right? And they go outside to start pairing up, and I love that most of them have different travel means, right? What is it? I think someone's riding a dragon. Someone's riding something. There's the bike.
We've got them riding thestrals, you know, because a few of them aren't great on brooms or don't really like brooms, like Hermione or Fleur.
Mm-hmm. And we've got Hagrid and Sirius's bike.
Yeah, which is really cool because
I mean, you've just got this variety of travel methods that are happening, and they're very strategic in who they choose and why they choose it and where they're who's gonna be where, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love the moment with Harry and Hagrid before they leave because, you know, it's Sirius's bike. And the last time that Harry was on this bike, he was a baby that Hagrid's like, you could fit in one of my hands. That's how tiny you were to me, you know? And I really also liked Harry's humiliation of sitting in the sidecar because there's not much more humiliating things to do than sit in a sidecar of a motorcycle and Ron kind of smirking at him. And they all take off.
I do love that Hagrid says something to the effect of like, I'm the one who brought you here. So it only seems fitting that I'm the one that takes you away, right? Yep. Like, I started this, I want to end it. And I think there's something beautiful about that, right?
Absolutely.
And it's that Hagrid moment where it's what we love about Hagrid is he kind of takes something so complex and distills it down to this very simple statement of like, I brought you here and I'm going to take you away. And that's the right way for it to be. And it's a touching little moment before we all sort of take off and chaos ensues almost immediately.
Yeah, this is, you know, obviously they've been thinking that they will be able to do this hopefully without a hitch, that, you know, they've been able to keep this silent enough so that nobody knows, but pretty much out of nowhere, almost immediately, they're all surrounded by these hooded figures in midair, in a circle, and it goes crazy. And sadly, almost immediately because of this, we have our first death in the book. And
this is where it gets sad. Like, this is where it starts with Dumbledore at the end of the last book, and then from here it's gonna just get sadder and sadder all the way through the end. All the way through the end. Like, get ready for it, people. This is so sad. It's so sad.
I remember reading this the very first time, and it's all happening so fast, and I kind of missed, and I had to reread it so that I could catch what was happening, just the fact that Hedwig dies. And I was like, Hedwig? Not Hedwig. No, not Hedwig. Like, I was beside myself when Hedwig died. And then, of course, not only does he lose Hedwig here, but he also loses the Firebolt. So basically the things that have become, that have come to define who Harry Potter is as a character, flying, his beautiful owl Hedwig, which Hagrid bought for him too, you know, like, are gone. So immediately two things that have become synonymous with Harry Potter are just gone immediately, taken away. And it is, it's just awful.
There's a lot of people and a lot of talk about Hedwig, you know, what he represents, or she, I guess, I'm sorry, she represents. And it's that this is the turning point between Harry being a child and being an adult. And that, like, this is the moment where the gloves come off and everything is fair game. And, like, you don't know anymore what can happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of talk. Rowling has come out and said, I think it was the second book, the first or the second book, she talked about she was going to kill off Ron. Like, she had every intention of killing him off early in the story. And she didn't, right? He's still with us. We know that. And I think most people would agree that's probably been the right call, as we've talked in-depthly. But I think that this is that moment where she has to, she's killed Dumbledore, served a purpose, furthered a plot. Now she has to start hurting us. And by us, we mean Harry, but we have to start feeling loss. We have to start experiencing the loss of innocence, because you can justify that Dumbledore wasn't innocent from everything we've heard, everything we're going to learn, right? She needs to kill off that innocent character so that we truly understand the impact of what's happening. It's like killing off Charity Burbage a few chapters ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
She truly didn't do anything wrong. She crossed the wrong people and held an opinion that wasn't popular or accepted by a particular group, but that's not wrong.
Right.
In this case, right? And here is someone who, here is a character we've come to love and we know is Harry's closest companion and was recently angry at him. And she was, you know, he was a little irritated with the bird being cooped up and all of that. And it just makes it so hard, so hard and heartbreaking. And especially when we come to find out that that is the, I guess it's the next chapter. I won't get into that. But it's heartbreaking, and it's so, it just tells you that the gloves are off. Everything's fair game. Mm-hmm. Good luck. Good luck, everyone. Good luck.
And they barely, and the thing is like, they barely survive that moment. And then Hagrid has to use every trick on the bike to help them get away. There's a button that creates this brick wall in midair that, you know, one of the Death Eaters smashes into. Harry's doing everything he can, you know, to throw curses and everything at people. And then they use the next button, which is Dragonfire, which is meant to really propel the bike even faster. And by doing that, though, the sidecar starts to come off and Hagrid tries to fix it and it just falls off. And Harry has to use Wingardium Leviosa to keep himself in the air and barely hangs on with his life till Hagrid can come grab him and bring him, you know, onto the bike itself. And they almost don't make it because Harry runs into, and they run into on the bike, Stan Shungpike is after them. And Harry is just like, what in the world? And he uses Expelliarmus to try and get rid of Stan and his wand. And immediately he cries, that's him. That's the real one. And then the big bad daddy of bad and evil shows up himself. And it's
big bad daddy-o.
it's really bad. Like, Voldemort is there. He's not flying on anything. You know, the movies portray that you can just fly on whatever. Voldemort is the only character who we really see that can do that. Mm-hmm. And he's not on a Thestral. He's not a broomstick. He's just there, and he raises his wand. Harry
and as Harry is like, Hagrid's been knocked unconscious. Like, Harry.
Well, no, Hagrid jumped off on the other remember Hagrid jumps off on a Death Eater who's trying to kill Harry, and...
Yeah, well, I mean, Hagrid's not there. The bike is running out of control. Nope. Everything is everywhere. They're like, and he's in this like free-for-all chaos. And Voldemort is chasing him, riding nothing, which is terrifying, ready to kill him. Like, holy guacamole, people. It's
holy it's guacamole, something... Batman.
You have to read this chapter or this section of the chapter a couple of times to follow everything that's happening, because it's all happening so fast at the same time. And like, she's really throwing you in the chaos here with it. And you know, he's ready. He's ready to kill Harry. He's got it. No grandstanding this time for him.
Well, and as he goes to kill him, the pain on Harry's scar is so bad that he is like forced to shut his eyes, and his wand does something of it, like its own accord. Like it does this weird thing. It kind of drags his hand around, and Harry kind of like in his squinting eyes can kind of see this like golden fire come out of his wand. And then Voldemort screams in fury and is screaming like, and Harry like hits the dragonfire gas again to get away. He lands on the ground. He sees Hagrid there.
Hagrid.
He hears Voldemort crying out for somebody else to give him their wand, and then he vanishes. And that's where we leave the chapter, which I remember reading this first time and freaking out, because we don't know at the end of this chapter. Until you turn the page and then you see the chapter title and you're like, oh no, is Hagrid really dead? Like, I thought she was going to do that too. And I mean, we'll have to wait until next week to see, because I'm not going to tell you.
No, you're kind of dead. But yeah, I mean, yeah. At this, yeah, it's you don't know who, and you don't know who else is dead in the sky, right?
No.
We don't know where anyone is. We don't know what anyone else is doing. Because even if they found the right Harry, that there's still a benefit to the Death Eaters to kill everyone else in the air, right?
Yep.
Like, just because they're not Harry doesn't mean there's no targets on their back. Like, now all of them are fair game. So, that there's this constant, and we don't know why all of a sudden Voldemort disappeared, or is he going to reappear, and what's going on? And we're left at this with all this chaos, and we're left at this like, what? Kind of at the end of the chapter. And it's, you know, this is one of those books where you want to just keep reading, because the chapters end that way.
Yep.
Something happens and then the chapter ends and you're like, no, I must keep reading. So, I mean, we're going to find out what happens in the next chapter, and then the chapter after that is going to have even more kind of play out as to where we're going from here. But all we know is that Harry has landed somewhere at some house. Hagrid's in, what, a muddy puddle or something like that. And that's it. That's all we know. Face down, muddy puddle.
Yeah. It's it's so tough. Like, it's such a hard place to leave and have to wait till next week. But, you know, that's right. We got to wait till the next chapter. So
that's the name of the game, y'all.
Yep. That's the podcast. So, Drea, if people want to catch up with you and maybe see what's going on social media with you, or maybe they just want to like commiserate because they know what happens, and
or they want me to tell them because they're scared.
Maybe. Where could people find you?
So, and actually that plays a little bit into next week as well, which we're gonna throw out there now, may or may not happen, which is a terrible place to leave the cliffhanger, and we're very sorry about that. But I'm actually having an elective surgery this week, and so I may or may not be up to recording, because I've already put it out there that I'm not recording while on painkillers. So y'all might have to wait another week for that. But if you want to see how I'm doing, or see what I decide to Instagram while on painkillers, 'cause I'm not, no one's taking my phone
Could
away.
Could be really interesting, so follow, we're folks.
We're just taking my mic away. You can find me on Twitter at PCFchick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN. And now I feel like I need to just make something ridiculous, put something ridiculous on Instagram this weekend.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that would be great.
See what happens. Let's see what happens, y'all. We'll roll the dice. We'll roll the dice.
You got a pool now, so who knows what's going to happen?
Who knows?
There you go.
Although I won't be able to be in the pool after surgery, but
that's
who knows what else will go in the pool after surgery. So,
well, yeah, you know, you can always throw something fun in the pool.
I'll throw something in there. I'll put something in the weird flamingo floaty and see what happens.
Well, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, under the name MattRushing02. I'm here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills. Every week we're talking about a new Star Wars topic, so a lot of fun there. You can also find me on the Trek FM network, do two shows. One is called The Orb. I do that with Chris Jones, and when we get a chance, we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I'm doing the 602 Club, our general geek show, talking about all of the fandoms that we love there. And I'm hoping to be back soon with Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney, where we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.